Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. Episode 13 of the Proper Mental Podcast is with Nick Hogbin. Nick is an artist, a musician, and a podcaster. He's the host of the Mouth of Manliness podcast. He's also a mental health advocate and a patron of the My Black Dog mental health support charity. And Nick has been, he's been dealing with his own mental health stuff and depression from a very young age, since his childhood. So over the years, he's really kind of explored the topic in a lot of different ways. He's tried a lot of different meds, a lot of different therapies. He's read a lot of things and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So he's really, really fascinating to talk to about depression and to about mental illness in general. He's also the host of a mental health and mental wellness podcast called the Mouth of Manliness podcast, which is really good. It's a favourite of mine, which is how I kind of found out about Nick and why I asked him if he'd come on for a chat with me. And they've got a lot of episodes, and he's spoken to so many different people. It's really given him quite a unique, I suppose, insight. So that combined with his own stuff, really unique insight into mental health, into mental wellness, into depression and all that stuff. So he's a fascinating guy and he's a really fascinating chat. His podcast is brilliant. I would really, really recommend it. He's had all sorts of different guests. And I think what I really like about the pod is that one week he might have like a musician on, and he might be someone or they might be someone that you've heard of, that have got a big following, you know, like a really well-known person. And then a week after, he might just have like one of his mates on. And whatever they chat about, whoever he's talking to, it's always really interesting. You know, they always kind of maybe go to places you wouldn't expect. And yeah, it's very conversational based as well. So it's, I think all my favorite podcasts are one that maybe feel like, you know, when you're on a train and you're earwigging on someone else's conversation, and then when it's time to get off at your stop, you're kind of like, oh, I don't really want to get off. I want to know like what Barry said to Dave or whatever. And yeah, Nick's podcast is a bit like that. So they just get into stuff and chat, and you just sit and listen, and you're along for the ride. So it's really good, and I highly recommend it. I'll put all the links and stuff in the notes. So yeah, we sat down and had a chat over Zoom. We chat about all sorts of stuff, some of it mental health, some of it not. And we chat about like masculinity, we chat about creativity, we go down a bit of a music rabbit hole for a while. And yeah, it's really good. I felt like we really hit it off. He's a lovely, lovely bloke. And we had a lot in common. So we were kind of like a similar age group. We got some similar interests in music and stuff like that. And I kind of felt with Nick that if he like lived around the corner from me, we'd probably be quite good mates, you know. And I think that comes across in the chat. I do feel like I was maybe a little over familiar with him, because I'm used to listening to his podcast. So I'm used to having his voice in my headphones. So, you know, yeah, I just kind of, that allowed me to just like just join in and chat to him as if we'd known each other for years. But, you know, I think it makes for a really, really good listen. So if you'd like to know a bit more about Nick, you can follow him on Instagram at Nick Hogbin. If you'd like to know more about his podcast, it's at Mouth of Manliness Podcast on Instagram. On Twitter, it's M of Manliness PD. And the website is www.mouthofmanliness.com. If you'd like to look at his artwork, which is really cool, and you can find that on Instagram at loveless_artist, or the website is lovelessart.co.uk. And like I mentioned before, Nick's a patron for My Black Dog, which ties it in nicely, because you might have seen on my social media that I'm doing some fundraising for them at the moment. Basically, the first 10 guests, out the first 10 guests who came on, anyone who had like a book or a t-shirt or a bit of merch or whatever, I kind of got in touch and said, could you donate something? I'm going to raffle it off for charity. And people were really, really generous. And we got all sorts of cool stuff. So Brutal Claire has given us a signed copy of her brand new book. That's only come out in the last couple of months. She signed one and sent that to me. Amanda Allen, all the way from Australia, has given me a discount code for her ebook series. And she's got like training guides in there, nutrition stuff. She's got an autobiography. So, you know, three-time CrossFit Games champion, and you can get your hands on her nutrition guides and training guides. So I think that's a cracking one. What else have we got? Paul Mort's given me a signed book and a t-shirt that you can't buy. They're normally exclusive for his coaching clients. It's one of the ones that he wears in a lot of his videos and stuff like that. Mike West, who does our amazing theme tune and music that you're going to hear in a minute, he's going to sign a CD and a vinyl, and he's chucked those in as well. I've been working on with like a local clothing company called Royal Flush, who are brilliant. I've been kind of going back and forth with them about maybe doing a little bit of merch for the podcast. Initially, just like a limited edition run. So they've sent me some test things. And so there's only going to be three of these t-shirts in existence for the time being. And I'm going to chuck one of them in as well. So you get a limited edition Proper Mental t-shirt. And I've also said that whoever wins, if they want to, they can hop on the podcast and we'll record like a little bonus episode to pop out on a Thursday. And we can sit down and we can chat about anything you want. You know, if you've got a mental health related story, we can talk about it. If you want to ask me about some of the guests that have been on or chat to me about anything, or, you know, just have a bit of a natter, then we'll record that and I'll pop it out like a proper episode as well. And I think that's everything. We might have some more stuff. I apologize if I've forgotten anything off the list. There's quite a list, right? So it's only a fiver per entry. You can enter as many times as you like. If you want to enter and then go and leave us a nice review on Apple, then that's going to count as an extra entry. 100% of the money is going to My Black Dog. I think we're going to have Nikki from My Black Dog on at some point, who's going to, you know, tell a little bit more about the charity, and we're going to have a bit of a chat about how it came about and all that sort of stuff. And then round about the same time, we'll be picking a winner at random. They get all the stuff, they get to come on a podcast, and we get hopefully to raise a couple hundred quid for a really good charity. So their charity is an online support system, basically online support charity, and it's run by volunteers who have all had their own experiences with mental health. So it's kind of like the Samaritans, I just like what they do. I like how they go about it. I like the people that are involved with it. I just think they're really, really brilliant and really, really important. And when I was struggling, I didn't know about them then, when I was really poorly last year, but I think that's the sort of people that I would have reached out to, whereas maybe I felt like with some other charities that they just weren't for me. So that's My Black Dog. Go and check them out as well. If you head to my social media, there's a link to the GoFundMe. It's only £5. You'll win all that stuff. That was a really long intro. So let's get straight into it. Here is episode 13 of the Proper Mental Podcast with Mr. Nick Hogben. Yeah, it's cool, man. Aspects of it really suit, eh? Yeah. Really, really suit. Yeah. So I'm kind of recording already, mate, anyway. So I'll just do a little intro. But here we are with another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast. And my guest this week is Nick Hogben. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's exciting. It's fun.
Oh, yeah, cool, man. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of your podcast, Nick. It's how I kind of came to know about you and who you are and what you do and stuff like that. And you're on like season three, right? It's just started.
Yeah, just started season three. I realised just before coming on this that like next week will be 2 years I've been doing it.
Wow.
So yeah, we're getting close to our 100th episodes, really.
Mate, that's cool, huh?
Yeah, that's amazing. It's been great. Yeah, I wouldn't change it at all.
Yeah, I love it. And what sort of why did you just start your podcast? Where did that sort of come from?
Well, it comes from So it was about 2.5 years ago. I had a really bad mental spell, and I then kind of just started engaging with lots of therapy and psychotherapy and hypnotherapy, and then just this kind of realization that a lot of it, like one of the big factors was like the shame of it, you know, the shame of having a mental health problem. And I think at that point, I was just so sick of it. I was so sick of being ill. Like, so I've had mental health problems, or, you know, virtually all my life. And yeah, I was so just so sick of it. And so sick of the shame and hiding it, and just realizing that so much of it stemmed from me hiding it, that I decided to go the complete other way and talk about it as openly as possible. I got a friend who's got like a really successful podcast, and I guested on his. And I just loved it. I loved the medium of it, really, and how kind of open and free you can be. So I just got some advice and started doing my own one, really. But, you know, like, it was just to kind of show other people that we can talk about it as well. You know, like, that was a large part of it. But, yeah, I just had enough of it all. And I thought by being really open about it, it would help me. And it has, it really has.
Yeah.
It's changed my life, really.
Oh, mate. Yeah, that's awesome. And I think there's something about just relatability, isn't there? You know, like hearing people talk, and you can almost, so sometimes when I listen to your podcast, for example, I could easily be at that table if we knew each other. Like, do you know what I mean? And you know, people chat about stuff and you think, oh, I really relate to that, or that's really interesting, or oh, I've got a really good point on that, like I wish I could tell him. Sometimes, yeah, it feels a bit like that, doesn't it? Yeah
I mean, that's kind of like, that's the goal, really, isn't it? The goal is that it's just this open conversation where there's no judgment and we can just talk. And I had Rich Wilson, the comedian, on, and he was saying how it's important that voices like ours are heard, and, you know, normal people talking about mental health problems. You know, it kind of, I mean, not to trivialise, but just to kind of normalise mental health issues, you know, it's so important that people know that they're not, just having a mental health problem or not feeling, you know, struggling with life is, it doesn't make you insane. You know, it's, it doesn't make you a crazy person. It's actually just, it's quite normal.
Yeah. 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 And yeah, spending time with that and talking about it really, really helps. Why our podcast is called Proper Mental. That's a quote from myself. You know, when I was poorly, I didn't know what it was. And I genuinely thought I was going insane. And that's why I didn't speak up. And yeah, hearing other people talk about experiences and stuff like that, and you kind of go, oh, hell, man, that's like, that's how I feel, or that's how I felt, or that's kind of familiar. Yeah, it makes it a lot easier to yeah, to start talking. Yeah.
I find, like, every episode, like, I'm learning stuff. Like, every time I speak to someone, I'm learning something, or I'm like, jeez, yeah, I did, or, you know, it makes me reflect on something I'd completely forgotten about, like the depths of my mental problems at times. So, like, every episode is, like, helps me.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
Yeah. And it just goes to show the power of talking, right? Like, if I always think that if it was much more acceptable that people just chatted like that to their mates rather than being on a, listening to a podcast, or if it was acceptable, just sit down at a table in a pub or wherever it is you spend your time and just say, oh, I feel a bit shit and this is why. Yeah, it would be a lot. I think the world would move a lot differently, right? It would,
Yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it? Because men just, I think it's this idea that men are meant to be strong, men are meant to be, have it together, and, you know, and it's based on, you know, history, isn't it? You think, like, you know, our grandparents being in a war, you know, if we start going, oh, we feel a bit sad, then they're going to be like, well, I was in a fucking war. And, you know, well, I can't compete with that. And so we just all shut up and they start that kind of stiff upper lip thing. And men, you know, just get stuck in this like model that is just, it doesn't need to be. It's like, it doesn't fit the world anymore. You know, it's like, why do we do it? But, you know, it's still going on, you know.
Yeah.
It's like we have these surface conversations. Like, I've always preferred talking to women just because I can have a proper conversation rather than this, you know, men talking about like women in a bad way or, you know, or sport. Like, I never fit into any of that. You know, I always felt like none of that fit me. I was never comfortable. So like that just kind of pushed me more into this kind of shroud it pushed me into being like mentally ill on my own. So like this kind of refusal to be quiet about it. It's like, no, like I'm totally open about everything now. Like I'll tell people all day long that I've got mental health issues. And it's really liberating. It just changes everything. And, you know, I don't care if you feel badly of me. You know, yeah. Most people don't. Most people, once you start, what I found since doing the podcast, once you open up about it, all these people come out of the woodwork and they're like, shit, yeah, I have that. Like, yeah, I've never even thought about it, but I think I've got anxiety. And you're like, yeah, you probably have, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, like we internalize all these things and yeah, keep it to ourselves, and you don't know what it is and it doesn't have a name. And so you kind of think, well, everyone must be like feeling like this, and you know, you just get a bit lost in the whole process. But it's really interesting what you're saying there about like you know, this idea of being a man and masculinity as well, because that really, really fascinates me. And when I was like in a really, really low point and I was seeing everywhere like on social media that, oh, you know, men don't speak up and like because it's too manly, and very similar to what you've just said, I'm not a blokey bloke. I'm not into like pints and birds and all that sort of stuff. I like, you know, yoga and talking about my feelings. And so I thought, well, I'm not a stereotypical bloke. I'm not a manly man. So that can't be me. I'm not one of the men that isn't speaking up, because I'm not really like manly like that. But there's all layers to like masculinity, you know, like I might not be into that stuff, but I do pride myself in being like a good dad and a good husband and a provider. And it was only once I started unpicking all that sort of stuff, I realized, no, hang on, I still am judging myself by these standards just because my interests and behaviors are a bit different. There's still this underlying, you know, you've got to be strong for everyone kind of thing going on. So yeah,
it's like that is nature in many ways. You know, nature tells us to be that way. Like, you know, the men are the providers and the women are like the gatherers and the nurturers. It's almost like we can't help ourselves. You know, it's inherent in us that we kind of feel the need to be that way. But it's really damaging. You know, it's hugely damaging. And I was exactly the same. Like you said, I was like that guy. And I thought, no, I talked about things. When I started doing it, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, like old friends going, I didn't realise. And I'm just like, yeah, I used to be hugely self-destructive. And it's like, why did you not realise? I realised that through my life, there's been so many points when I'm actually like screaming out, like, help me, help me. But people don't. People are, and that's not because they're horrible. It's because they're actually dealing with their own stuff. They're dealing with what's in their head as well. And it's like, you know, they can't possibly take something else on. And I think it's funny, I was talking about this with my wife last night, is that you don't have to take other people's stuff on to be nice and to be good. You just have to listen. And be polite, even, you know, you don't actually have to do anything much.
You know? Yeah. But it's, you kind of, I don't know if you felt the same thing. I've talked about this a lot on our podcast about how, you know, when you've experienced stuff with your mental health, it makes you a much more compassionate human being. and very much like things that I used to like get on my nerves or cause me to have a bit of a whinge and stuff like that. Now I'm much quicker to say like, oh, I bet they're having a bad day, or, you know, and it can be detrimental because sometimes I'll go out of my way to be nice, to like protect people that might not even need it. They might actually be a bit of a dickhead in that moment for whatever reason, you know, but yeah, it does make you sort of really like care about other people, eh?
Yeah, it's for me. That's I've been through both, really. I've been through points when I'm like, when I just feel so separate and isolated that I've just been really angry at everyone and angry at the world and like, why me? Why am I like this? And I think part of my recovery in many ways is that, like you said, where you can you stop kind of putting your anger onto other people and you start dealing with the anger and then you can be a bit more objective about what other people do and you can be more empathetic. Yeah, as I say, like I feel like I am now, but I've not always been that way. Like when I've certainly not, you know, there's been times when I've hated everyone because it's like, you know, I just want to die. I want to die. And why is no one rescuing me, you know?
Yeah. Now that's a strong one, isn't it? Like, yeah, wanting to be rescued. It's like being trapped, isn't it? You know, you can't go back, you can't go forward, you don't want to be where you are. And yeah, it's just that not knowing what to do or where to go, and just want someone to like pick you up out of that situation and put you down somewhere else, like one of them claws out the grabber machines.
Yeah.
But yeah, life doesn't work like that.
I find myself coming back to I think we all do it, is that we look to others to make things better, you know, like or you rely on your friends or you look to your wife to make things better or your partner in some way, and like part of being better and my recovery has been stop doing that. Because you always get let down. People don't mean to, but when you're looking to others to solve and make you feel better, that's not actually the answer. The answer is you feeling comfortable in your own skin and you like it's you have to look in rather than out. It took me, I'm 45 now, and it took me until just a few years ago to really learn that. So it's not outside. And that's where like spiritual stuff comes into play, because it's like you're talking about like concepts rather than actual things. And I never thought I'd really be into anything like that. And I'm not massively spiritual. I'm still a massive skeptic, but I've learned that's where the answer is. It's like what's inside, you know, and being. So yeah, I meditate sometimes and that has really made the difference for me. And I have to keep kicking myself up the arse because I see myself doing it. Someone's going to make things better. Oh, look, if I'm like, they might do that, then I might do that. And it's like, now you're going to get let down because your expectations are too high. And like, we all do that. We all do it all the time. And it's a really bad way of going.
Yeah. You can't expect you from someone else, you know? Yeah. And like you say, that's not their fault. They've got their own stuff. But the spiritual aspect is really, really interesting. Because I think like, I wish there was another word for it, because spiritual is such like a wanky term, but I use it myself because there isn't another word. And a lot of these things, because they've been like chopped up onto little quotes on Instagram and stuff, it's very easy to think, oh, it's just a like fortune cookie stuff. But yeah, stuff like, you know, the answers lie within and all these classics and stuff like that. It's true, but it takes so long to like, figure out what it actually means, because you think, well, it's just like a sentence. How can that fucking help all this mess? Just one sentence. But yeah, it takes a lot of work, doesn't it? A lot of self-reflection and digging around and, you know, stirring the pot.
It's I was seeing an amazing therapist. He's been on the podcast a few times, Peter, and the most powerful stuff that has really helped me are a sentence. You know, like the sentence of, you know, you can do, Yeah, you can only control what you think and what you do. And then it's like, well, I can control what I think. And then you're like, that's just madness. And like, essentially, that's a spiritual thing, because you have to kind of look within to be able to do that. And it's really hard to do. But yeah, you totally can. I mean, I do. I do it all day, every day now. But yeah, that was just a sentence. I think it's Marcus Aurelius said that. And it's like, and he had that figured out in Roman times, you know.
Some of these old boys were on it, weren't they? These old Stoics and that.
It's a really, it's a really obvious thing, and it sounds glib, but you know what? I live by that. You know, I find myself getting wound up with what other people do, and they start to upset me, and then I start to get depressed. And when I start to get depressed, I start to get ill, and I can't let that happen, really. And that is when I'm like, hold on. You can't control it. You know, like, you can't control what other people do. You can just control how you think about it. So, like, yeah, we say, like, oh, it's fuck, you know, something someone's put like a picture of a beach and they've got some glib thing on it. Unfortunately, those are the answers. They really are. They are the answers. And like, I'm on loads of medication, but none of that actually stops, you know, it stops me, it stops me killing myself, is what I always say. But like that on its own doesn't solve the problem. The problem is solved by me. And me working on it. I always see it like being like, you know, being an addict. You've always got to work on it. And I often think about my mental health in terms, in those kind of terms, like you've always got to be working on it. And it's just so true. And it's those statements that come back to me when I feel myself dipping. And I'm like, ah. Or my wife will go like, you're driving yourself mad. Go and meditate. And then I'll go and meditate, and I'll meditate for an hour. And then I'll be like, ah. My brain's shut up for a bit, and it'll take an hour. I'll probably get 2 minutes right at the end, but like, I'll come away and I'll be like, I'm a bit better. I'm a bit like, I can see things for what they are. When I'm not well, I can't. So yeah, those terms, they're everything. They are absolutely everything to me. That's what keeps me alive.
Yeah, mum. Yeah, for real. And afterwards, when like, when your head's mental and all this stuff is just like spinning around and going crazy, then, you know, no one's going to be able to deal with like a really complex concept. You know, you need something just cut straight through. And almost like, I find I need things to just stop me in my tracks and just say, bonf, like, you know, take a step back so you can like think, you know, or stop thinking about it rather than just constantly thinking about it. Yeah, those simple terms can just sort of cut through the noise, I suppose, man. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Let me let my dog in.
Yeah, no worries.
Come on. Yeah, I mean, the problem is that when you're really, when everything's going on and you're not feeling good, you just don't think well. So you need to have some kind of mechanism that makes you step back, and then you think a bit better. And you start seeing things for what they are, and they're not actually that bad. But when your brain's like racing and your head's all over the place, you don't think well. It's like when you're drunk. When you're drunk, you make mistakes. Like, don't try and do anything important when you're drunk, because you won't do it well, you know? And I kind of see it like that. If you're drunk, then you don't think well. You know, you send stupid messages to people and you say stupid things. And it's kind of like that when you're struggling, when you're not mentally well. It's like, you don't think well. I tend to, like, if I'm really not doing well, I just go to bed and I'll sleep for hours and hours. And then at least, like, I used to sleep far too much, and it was just because I just wanted to be, like, not in my head. But now, if I'm really not doing well, quite often I'll just sleep, and then that kind of, there's a bit of reset in that somewhere.
Yeah. Like mental health stuff is incredibly energy intensive, isn't it? And I think of energy in as like two separate things. So there's physical energy that I need to be able to like go to work and do my thing and just be a person. But there's another energy. There's an emotional energy. And that's the one that gets run out through, you know, through whatever it is that's going on. And when that tank starts to empty, then that's when, you know, things get pretty dark, man. That's the energy that has to be protected. That's why like sleep and stuff is really beneficial. Yeah.
It was funny. I remember this was before I started the podcast at the time of the breakdown, and I got an assessment with a psychiatrist, and they started talking. They went, "Do you have this? Do you have this? Do you have this? Like, are you tired all the time?" And I'm like, "I am constantly tired." And then, "Are you ill a lot?" And I'm like, "I'm constantly ill." And they said, "That's because you're actually like, rather than like everyone else is just getting on with it, you're fighting this internal battle, which makes you physically tired, you know?" Like, and I was like, I've got an answer to why I'm always tired. And, you know, like I could say to my wife, "I'm not shit, I'm ill," you know? And it is. Like, it's mentally exhausting, but it actually is physically exhausting. And because you're mentally and physically exhausted, you get ill a lot.
Yeah.
And like, that's the things that people don't really take into account. But exhausting.
And like pretending that you're not poorly as well, that's exhausting. Yeah. Like trying to be okay in the world, that that kind of long term, that strategy kind of fucks things up as well, eh?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so like being honest about it, being honest to yourself, you know, I think that's another thing that people don't you're so busy trying to not be like, I'm not crazy, and like I'm fine. And as you say, you're fighting an inner battle, but you're also then fighting another battle, trying to kind of convince everyone you're all right. It's like, now I've learned to be honest to myself, and I'm like, no, I'm not all right. And that's when I go to the doctors. You know, like, I know when I'm not all right now, and I tend to grab it much quicker.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, in the past, not at all. But now I know. My wife's really clued up on how I work now. And she'd be like, "You're not all right, are you? Go to the doctors, have a medication review, go and see a hypnotherapist."
That's cool. If you got someone who's like, yeah, kind of got your back and can kind of see it coming, you know, before you do, then that's, that's a big help, eh? A big help.
Because I think,
I know the signs now, and I feel like if I'm being honest with myself, if I have a bad day, then I look back at what I've been up to in the preceding weeks, and I've been neglecting the stuff that I know that I need to do to make me be all right. And so normally I can find, you have been like, you know, for a week you've been fucking going to bed late and working a bit much and skipping meals, whatever it is, you know, that's going on. But yeah, I tend to get a feel for it. Whereas I used to just wake up in the morning and it's a case of, is today going to go all right? Or is today going to be fucking horrendous? And I wouldn't know until my feet hit the carpet and I stood up, and it would just be like, fuck, it's going to be one of them today, you know? But yeah, now I can kind of feel it coming. And yes, like you said, my first thing is always sleep. That's what I always do. I go straight to sleep and I say, stock up that energy, just get, you know, try and get the levels up, and then maybe I can make some good decisions instead of some negative decisions is kind of how I play it.
And it's all such a balance, and the balance can be exhausting sometimes. Like you said, that I'll have a big dip, and then I'll do exactly like you said. I'll look back and I think I've been going downhill for ages, and it's basically because I stopped working on it. You know, I got exhausted, like things were all right. I had enough of working on myself, things are all right, I'm all right, and that's when everything goes wrong, basically. And then things aren't all right, or I start drinking more than I should, You know, that's always been a crutch for me. And I know that only leads to me being really miserable. And then, but then I get annoyed because it's like, why can't I just be like everyone else? But I can't, you know, I can't.
Yeah.
I'm sure people with like serious disabilities feel exactly the same. And I'd argue that, you know, my mental health is a disability in many ways. It infringes on your life just as, you know, all right, I might be physically well, but it actually infringes on my life in a massive way. And actually, you are covered under the Disability Act and quite largely. So there's people listening, they're having grief at work. Check out the Disability Act because your work does actually have to make a concession for you.
Right. Hey, that's interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. It's mad that you mentioned the acceptance of it then, because somewhere out there, there's like a little Instagram square that says like acceptance is key, or, you know, something that's it's another one of those things, isn't it?
But and another one of those things that is really true. Like, I think just the things that I just said shows that I've got some acceptance of it. And that's actually another really difficult one to get, like, to accept that I've, you know, it's a long, because a lot of people have a mental health problem. They'll have a period and then they'll move on. And some of us unlucky people are stuck with it. And you don't ever really get rid of it. And, you know, I fall into that camp. I had to accept it. I went through years of trying to drink it and drug it out, and none of that works. In the end, you just have to go, it is what it is.
Mm.
And you accept and manage. And that sounds really crap. It sounds really like, I'm saying it and I'm like, oh, that sounds so miserable, man. But it's not all miserable. It's really not. Because once you accept it, you can start doing good things, and you stop letting that problem guide you.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that, like, through doing a lot of work, I'm a huge fan of like talking therapy, and that's something that I'm, you know, I'm into it. And I think good or bad, I will do that all the time, whether I feel I need it or not. I just really, really, really like it. And those sort of doing the work gives me like a toolbox of stuff. But when I'm in a good patch, then I've got all these tools and I can use them for anything I want. And I think that's a bonus of having mental health stuff, is that when you're in a place to use all this stuff, you've just got all these awesome tools that you can apply to different situations and stuff like that.
I mean, that's so true. It isn't, they do apply to life as a whole.
Completely.
You know, like, even if it's just, you know, someone's pissing you off and you just go, I'll just accept that I can't do anything about that. You know, like, it does all cross-pollinate across everything we do. Yeah, it's totally true. I mean, I had my first therapy when I was at 11.
Wow.
And it really took me up until probably about 4 years ago that I actually went, I'll get it now. You know, like, but it took me giving myself over to it. You know, once I gave myself over to it, I really, really, the rewards were huge. This is the first time in, like, I was having psychotherapy every week for 3 years, and I stopped a couple of months ago. And I'm not having any therapy at the moment. And this is the first time in about 5 years when I'm not having like weekly or twice weekly therapy of some sort. And it's pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, oh, look, I've achieved something. And that's the thing, you know, like, people don't really, like, when you, like, say, acceptance, and you get it, then you've actually achieved something really big that most people can't do. They can't accept, like, their spot in, in the universe.
yeah, definitely. Do you feel like, you know, so a lot of therapy, obviously, you know, there's all the looking at the behavioral stuff and the reason stuff like that. But one of the cool things about therapy is just having like a weekly brain dump, you know, when you can you know, so I can talk to my wife, but I don't want to worry her, right? So I can go to, I can go to my shrink. I can just like throw up everything. He has to just deal with everything. And then I can just leave and leave it to him. But I suppose like in some elements, your podcast might give you that as well, you know. Maybe you know, you can just talk all this stuff out, and then boom, if it's done, it's recorded, it's out in the ether, and you can just like crack on, right? Crack on with you.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's also nice to have like occasional experts and things on, because then you'll be really learn stuff. And I tend to share a lot in the podcast. Like I talk about everything, and I share everything really. So it is a bit of a kind of a dump as well. Therapy is just so important about getting the person who works for you, and you have to commit to it. You have to commit. If you don't commit to it, it's a waste of time. And like sometimes it's painful, you know. You're talking about things, or you have these realizations about horrible things that might have happened when you were younger, or you've not really thought about, and like it's painful sometimes, and I think that frightens people and puts them off. But you do actually work through it. There's resolution. You know, it's not. It's like a good film. You know, beginning and middle and an end, and the end generally is good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why it's called The Work, right? Because it's hard work. Yeah. How do you find your guests, Nick? Because you've got like, you know, your guest list's so impressive, but it's a real range. It's all sorts of people come on for a chat.
Yeah, I don't know. Doing the podcast has given me confidence, and it's given me this kind of idea that people want, like, if I ask the right people, they usually say yes. Or you don't hear anything. Like, it's like you'll get one in 50 that you've gone and asked for. I always wanted to be a rock star, and there was always this idea that rock stars had it sorted and it was all okay. And then I talked to a number of rock stars, and they're just as bad as me. You know, they're like, you know, they're playing Lollapalooza in California, and they're in their own personal hell, you know. And it's like, and that was really good for me, because I always struggle to accept that I'm not a rock star, and like, and nothing matched up. And then I had that conversation, and I'm like, so that wouldn't have solved the problem. You know, that wouldn't have solved it. I would still be me having this crap in my head. So actually, it don't matter where I am. So learn to accept where you are. That was like my big thing about, you know, speaking to people in the music industry in particular, to dispel the myths to myself more than anything. Say, you know, no, this is a human thing.
Yeah.
No matter who you are, like, you've still got to get by. And but it was Jason from A, who's an absolute diamond, and talking to him was an absolute revelation. I often say to him, like, you know, you did me a massive favour there, because you really taught me something that I really needed to hear. So, yeah, I mean, that was amazing.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's cool. I kind of think, like, with a lot of creative pursuits, you know, I kind of think, like, the stuff that makes, I see myself as quite a creative person, and the stuff that makes me good at the stuff that I like, or the stuff that makes me enjoy it, even if I'm shit at it, is also a factor of why I'm like, I don't want to use the words predisposed to mental health stuff, but I kind of feel like, you know, and it's almost a stereotype, you know, the like the sensitive singer-songwriter and stuff like that. But there is, you know, there's a part of me that kind of thinks, well, if anyone was going to get poorly, it was me, because like that's how I, because of that side of my character, you know?
Yeah, I think to be able to tap into being creative and creating, like the process of tapping in is means that you have to be vulnerable. And I think that's why a lot of creatives have got mental health problems. I think they don't go hand in hand. It's a cliche, but there's always something in a cliche. And my experience is, like, you know, I'm an artist and I'm creative all day long. I think there is something in it. I really do. And maybe I try now to channel, like, I let my anger out when I create artwork, really. So now I kind of use it rather than in the past when I didn't, in a weird way. But creative types are, I mean, it's well documented. You know, you don't have to look hard to see, you know, how many creative types have died through heroin use or alcohol. And, like, you know, I've worked with a lot of addicts and alcoholics in my life, and none of them are happy. Like, most of them are self-medicating because of something that's bad happened to them, which is, you know, giving them a mental health problem.
They
work together.
Yeah, and I suppose if you're chasing a dream, whether it's music or a career or something like that, you know, that's your version of self-medication, right? You know, so you're the whole Tyson Fury situation, you know, spend your whole life becoming a heavyweight champ and then realize that it's, you know, now what? You know, that type of thing.
It's that, like, realization that, like, it's funny talking to people in bands that often they're like, they're incredibly insecure and self-conscious. So, like, they'll be, you know, at the side of the stage and they'll watch a band and they'll be like, I'm never going to be able to top that. So it's always, or they'll have a successful record and then the record company are like, well, you've got to do something better now. So they're never, it's never good enough, which is quite a hard way to be, you know, like in a normal job. You have those experiences, but hopefully you're not having it all the time. You know, I mean, they might have these big highs, but if you come off of a gig and then you're like, I used to play, like, do a lot of gigs and tour and things. And in that time, quite often, like, there were a lot of highs, but, there was a lot of downs as well, because you'd be like, I just played really shit. No one noticed, but, you know, like, I played like shit and drink loads afterwards to come down, and it don't work. And you wonder, I often think, you know, does Dave Grohl ever get miserable? And, like, he don't look like he does.
He really doesn't, no.
But you wonder, like, if you've hit that success, like you said, Tyson Fury, you hit that success and then it's like, oh, what do I do now?
Mm.
And then you realise that you're just this little atom you're so insignificant. You can only really impact the people who are right next to you. You know, like, we're just so insignificant. And that's quite scary.
It is, yeah. Yeah. But there's also something, like, almost quite freeing about it.
That's,
you know,
so,
yeah. Just kind of just accept and, and just go with it and just be insignificant. And, you know, it affect the person, like, either side of you, like you say. Well, I'd be really chuffed with that if I got dead old and looked back at my life and thought, I had a really, like, positive impact on those people close to me. You know, that's nice, right? That's
If you're lucky, you'll have a positive impact on a few more, you know, and that's a good thing. But it's like, it's not everything. That's and you've still got to be well. If you're not well, then you're no good to anyone. That's what I see. But I like it. It's so true. When I was in my teens and 20s and just really, like, self-destructive and suicidal all the time, and I used to, think nothing's worth it. And, like, nothing is worth it if you really think about it. But actually, the fact that nothing's worth it is like, well, then why not? If nothing matters, then why not do something? Why not chance your arm? Why not give something a go? You know, why not live life and be as happy as you can be? You know, and that is another thing that it took me a long time to learn, but I'm kind of now I believe in me. Well, why not?
And yeah. Why? Yeah. If you, I suppose if nothing matters, then you can really choose what you choose to matter. You can choose what matters to you and make that matter more. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Like
you don't need to be afraid. If nothing matters, then why are you afraid? You know, like, I think that's kind of maybe how I would put it. Because like we're so driven by fear, aren't we? And you know, if you think about it, we're this little speck that doesn't really matter in the universe. Then what are we afraid of? What? Yeah, I don't really have fear like much anymore. You know, it's like, well, why not?
Yeah.
Doing a podcast, you think, well, I'm going to do something, and then good things happen. So it's like, hold on. If I get off my ass and do something, good things happen. Life isn't actually that shit, is it?
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it. And so much of it is like societal as well, isn't it? You know, you kind of, it's really hard to find your authentic self and like tune into you and what you really think about things and what you really feel when you're like pulled in all these different directions. And I think music is huge from that. So like we're in a similar age bracket, me and you, Nick. And I think like back when I was coming up, music was so tribal and you had to be in a box and you couldn't be in other boxes. Like now, you know, someone will come past me like with, I don't know, long hair in a tracksuit on a skateboard, you know, like it, like all the, but when I was coming up, you couldn't do those things. You couldn't mix all these things. And it puts you in these boxes that you go through life in a box and you don't know who you are or what you are. And you're living life for other people. And it all just chips away at the thing. Right.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? Like people often go, oh, how do kids in that cope now? Social media. And it's like, they cope very well, you know, cause they know. Like they do, like they know what they're so much more open-minded, and as you say, like you don't get like me and my mates talk about this all the time. Like the tribes that we used to have, you know, like you'd have Crusties and like you'd have like indie kids, and you'd have like people who like suede or whatever, and metalers, and like we look back on that quite fondly, and almost. Like my friends often be like, it's sad that kids don't have that now. And it's like, no, it's better, isn't it? Because then they don't have, they haven't got anything that they have to conform to. And so their identity isn't as important. It's not as important that it fits to something in particular. And, you know, like when you hear people talking and they really can't deal with people being transgendered or... you know, it's like, well, are you a girl or are you a boy? And it's like, what does it matter? Like, why does it matter to you? Why do you care? And it's because they're like, no, we need to put things in a box. And basically our brain works that way. Our brain goes, I can only deal with things if I can go, right, that's that and that's that. And that, and our brain does that for us. But it don't mean we have to listen and do it.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, with the music thing, it's all, I say, like nowadays is it's almost like another revolution. So like same in the 60s when everyone started growing their hair and just like being berserk, and it's the same now. Like you can just, you've got access to all this stuff and people are just like experimenting with it and mixing it together and coming out with all this mad stuff, you know. And I'm starting to get to an age where a lot of it, I, you know, I probably might sound a bit like nonsense, but I'm very aware that I don't want to be that older bloke saying everything sounds like nonsense. It's like, it's not for me, and it is a bit wild, but yeah, that's cool because you can tell that it's a like a melting pot of just mad stuff. And I'll tell you what's really exciting as well is you know, you're talking about like people's attitude towards gender and stuff like that, and we tend to really focus on the negative of society, and it's like, oh, kids and social media, and they're going to have to grow up with this and that and all the other. But to flip that, and I was thinking the other day, me and my friend were talking, and I said like, yeah, all right, there's this big thing going on at the moment with like people getting woke and like arguing about all of these big topics and stuff like that. But once that settles down and people are going to get more understanding and more accepting, and I've got small kids, and the idea that yeah, they're growing up in a world with social media and all these pressures and stuff, but they're also growing up in a world where, you know, they might not have to deal with some of these like fucking horrible parts of society, you know. They might, you know, not you know, they might have a friend of a different race and not have to see them experience racism. They might not have to, you know, feel the, my daughter, when she grows up, might not have to feel the same amount of fear that my wife did when she was a young age and stuff like that. You know, things are changing and it's fucking cool, right?
And they don't have to go through this horrible hidden life. They can just go, all right, I'm gay. And you go, all right. You know, like, it's just, like, you don't even have, like, that's not even a conversation. It's like, it's amazingly freeing that you think, like, kids can just be. They can just be whatever they want to be. And that is a revolution. You know, that is an amazing, amazing thing. And, like, that is, you know, and if it weren't for the internet and things, none of that would happen.
Yeah.
We focus on all these negatives. And it's like, actually, you know, like, isn't it amazing that they can just be? How amazing is that?
Because it's so much closer to, like, the human design, the original humans, which we're still based on. You know, they just were, man. They're just potting around doing caveman shit. And then society, like, kind of grew up around us. And, you know, there's so much societal impact drags us all over the place. But, yeah, if those walls can come down a bit and people can go back to that freedom, it sounds like very hippie-ish, doesn't it? But it really sounds nice as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's an amazing thing. And I think, yeah, we always kind of dwell on those negatives. And that's why, you know, just like, that's why I can't get into the right wing way of thinking, because that seems to be bringing it back. And I'm like, no, everyone can be, we will be citizens of the world. You know, like, we don't have anything. We've got our house, but like, everything else is, like, we, you know, anyone can do whatever they want as long as they're not hurting people.
Yeah, man. Human first, isn't it? Human first. Yeah. Everything else second.
Yeah, I don't understand why people wouldn't want that. But yeah, everyone's got their past and everyone, but we're all conditioned, aren't we, from the moment we're born. But it's funny talking about music. I was talking to my mate the other day, and like, my daughter's like really, likes Oasis, and I'm like, yeah, that's great, yeah, because like, that's from when I was younger. And but she sees them as being quite contemporary for some reason. But my mate was saying, like, that was like, you know, the way the age gap there is, like, your daughter will be it's like me really liking the Doors when I was younger, or the Beatles.
Yeah, like, yeah, what a cool way to look at it.
Distance. So for her, they're like, my daughter, the exception. But for a lot of kids, they'll be seeing the bands that we grew up as being really old. Whereas for us, I saw the Beatles as being like really old. And like, I railed against all of that because I hated old people. I was like, I refused to like the Beatles. It took me a long time to like the Beatles.
Yeah, I've never thought about it like that. Where, you know, when you get really into music, everyone goes through that phase where you like go for a Zeppelin phase or a Stones phase or all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's a cool way of looking at it. Yeah, and interestingly enough, like Oasis, I think, well, they were so, before this turns into a music podcast, but you know, one of the reasons they were so big is it was that, like, that crossover between, because suddenly you could, like, you could be into football and guitar music. Yeah. So those walls we talked about, they kind of like bashed a couple of them down, didn't they? And like, laddiness seeped into the indie arena and things mixed up a little bit.
Yeah,
those blurred lines.
Yeah, and they almost they said it was all right to get drunk a lot and be a bit horrible quite often, but they were funny in the same regard. I really like them now. Yeah, that kind of lad culture was, yeah, I didn't really think about it at the time because I used to say birds and that all the time, and now, like, it horrifies me because I'm like, I was brought up by women, you know, like, how awful was it that I used to use that, these terms so loosely. But the idea is just that you learn, isn't it?
Yeah, that's that. That good old conditioning for you as well, you know. I used to, like, I was a big Oasis fan, but I didn't used to like going, and I've seen them live a few times, so I didn't used to like it. I didn't like the vibe in the crowd, man. It had that kind of that laddie violence feel to it, and yeah, that wasn't, you know, wasn't for me. But anyway,
I really love their songs, but I've always been massively disappointed whenever I've seen them anyway, because I'm always like, they don't make any effort. It's like, you know, I'd rather see a band who look like they're really trying hard.
Yeah, yeah. Going berserk.
Sometimes I like that don't really do that as well now. I'm much more open-minded.
I wanted to ask you about your work with My Black Dog, Nick. So what is it you do for them? Because you're on the ambassadors page on their website.
Yeah, I just generally get involved with anything whenever I can, and I put all their logos on everything I do. And I, if we're given opportunity, I talk about them and send people their way. And theirs is a it's a peer-to-peer service, really. So basically you're talking to someone who's kind of been through a similar thing. And I think quite often the idea of going to your doctors and saying I'm struggling mentally is quite scary.
Big
the
time.
Idea of seeing a psychiatrist is quite scary, is even more scary.
Yeah, man.
Invariably, you're going to be met by someone who's nothing like you. You know, you're going to be met by a doctor. Doctors, you know, it's intimidating. So what they do is that you can talk to someone, either by phone or, you know, in a chat. So you can talk to someone who's been through it. You know, it's not an emergency helpline, but they are, you know, you get there before an emergency is the plan. But they're really, really ramped it up. They're getting sponsored by Chris Evans on Virgin Radio now, and they're one of his charities, so they get they get a lot of investment now.
Yeah.
Which is really amazing. So they're able to really kind of open the charity up now and like offer a lot more support. They're great. I'm really good friends with Nikki, the founder, and I kind of got involved through Eddie Temple Morris. And it's been a really good thing. It's been really good for me. It's made me feel like justified. It's made me feel like almost made it all proper for me.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like, you know, and I see this a lot, I kind of feel it myself, that people have been through something, when you get into a place that you can, you feel like you just want to contribute in some way. You know, like, I don't really know what or how, or just that feeling that you just want to, you don't really want people to kind of go through the things you did or go around the houses getting the help and sort of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Totally. You put it so well. Is that, you think someone just gave me that sentence and you're like, if I could give that sentence to someone else, that might really help. Funnily though, I do find that people still have to go through their own, more often than not, people still have to go through, like, you can help. And I say always try and help. But invariably, people still have to go down their own roads. And it's a shame. You see it so much. It's a shame. Like, you just go, nah, look, I've been there and I'm telling you this. And like, if you're telling someone something, they're probably not going to listen.
Yeah.
But people have to go down their own roads, and you kind of really wish it wasn't that way. And you try and suggest things, but so often people have still got to go and do it for themselves. But these charities are so important. I've used most of them myself. I've been on the edge more times than I like to think, really. And I've run the Samaritans loads of times. And they're like, just having someone to talk to. And like, just that. You just say it, and then suddenly there's not as much power in it, and you move on.
Works. Mate, and you think of the Samaritans, man, that's so lovely. Someone's just sat there by a phone waiting for it to ring, and when it does, they have a chat, and then they put that phone down and the shift finishes and they go home and they're like making the tea for the kids and all that sort of stuff. It's just like,
I've got a few friends who are Samaritans, and they have massive debriefs afterwards, and so that they don't go away and carry it, because that's so hard. Mm. But I think the thing is that you can't, people are going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So as long as you can kind of accept that, then it's much easier to deal with. All you can do is just try and help.
Yeah.
And most people just need to say it. That's the one thing I've really learned, is that most people just need to say it out loud. And because I was always frightened. I didn't used to like to talk about this, like what goes on in my head. And I never really told my wife about it. And that was part of the, you know, saying right at the beginning about like that, not holding it back anymore. Like, I never used to want to say what was going through my head. Like, constantly, my brain being barraged, telling me to kill myself. And the thought of saying that to someone who I love and who loves me, like, that's a really scary thing to say. Because then they're going to be like my wife said to me, like, since there's points when she's like, she'll go out and she won't know, and she's expecting to see me hanging.
Wow.
And like she's, that just kind of was really sobering. And she's like, I don't think you're going to be alive and I'll get home. It's like, no, it's actually, I'm not that bad. But yeah, so saying these things is quite hard to do, and it's quite hard for someone else to hear it. And that's why you do need someone else. Like, you might not want to say it to your mates. That's why these services are so important, because you can tell them and they're not going to be freaked out. So that was a big thing for me, just being really open about that. And that still freaks me out really now. But
Yeah.
It made me go quiet. Nothing makes me go quiet. But even thinking about it now, it's like, yeah, shit.
Oh, mate. Yeah, it's heavy, right?
Stuff to say. Yeah, I've had it. Like, I remember having this one point when I was, I was on a train, and I'd just been to see Nick Cave, and I love Nick Cave. And I was on the train, and all I could do was think about killing every last fucking person on the train. And like, to graphic detail about what I would do, and like, to be able to say that out loud, like, people are like, you're fucking mental. I'm like, oh yeah, I am. You know, I am. I'm unwell. I'm unwell, and this is what happens when I'm unwell. But it's like, actually verbalizing those kind of things. Like, who wants to hear that? Who wants to hear that? You can tell the Samaritans that, and hopefully they won't call the police.
But I don't know, like, things, yeah, when you speak openly, things feel different. That's what I always say. I say, it might not feel better, but it feels different. And if things have been shit, then different's enough. Different will buy you a bit of time.
Right? Yeah, perfect. Yeah. I do think that talking is as simple as that, talking about it takes the power out of it. Because sometimes you'll say it, and even as, like, I'll say things, and as I'm getting halfway through, I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I thinking that? That's madness. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even really, you know, like, I was so busy thinking about things that I didn't even stop to think about what it is I'm actually doing. You know, what am I actually thinking? I mean, I'll say it out loud, and I'm like, why am I worried about what someone else is doing? Or why am I so caught up on what someone else, I think, is thinking? And then I'm like, I can't do anything about that. I'll just get on with my life now. You know, like, it's simple as that.
Yeah. And thoughts are so weird, man. It's like being in a, sometimes being in your head's like being in a taxi, and a taxi driver goes a route you're not expecting, and you're kind of like, oh, this is happening. I'm not kind of sure. And I've done that. I've listened to myself in the moment saying something, and the other part of my brain's going, what are you doing? Shush. No, don't say that. You don't even mean it. And my mouth's just carrying on, just saying it. It's a bit mad. And what's next for the podcast, mate? Are you keeping going, lining these guests up, and keep smashing them out?
This season, we've already done a load. I've got to do, like, I'm gonna have to go shortly because I'm doing one like pretty much straight after. this season, so got quite a few young bands on, and it's quite nice to get this kind of younger perspective on things. Got a lot of women on this season, which has been really, really nice and refreshing as well to kind of get a different angle on things. We might be doing a live one at Camp Bestival, but I'm still waiting to see if that'll happen. I'm trying to enjoy it more. There was a point when I'm like, oh, I really want to make, like, I want this to be my job. And I've kind of learned this lesson that I'm trying too hard. And I did get so like all consumed with the podcast and wanting it to be successful. Actually, I was thinking, no, I'm trying for me to be successful. And it was again, I'm like, I'm trying to be a rock star again, just with a podcast. So now I've learned that don't do that. Just enjoy things for what they are.
Yeah.
So I've chilled out a lot on it now. Like the last season, where I was on my own, I was just going mad and I was driving myself mad trying to kind of be bigger and better. And now I'm like, no, it's just about the conversations. So I'm just relaxed with it now, just enjoying it. And it's working, you know, it's working.
Yeah. And I think, like, to wrap up, that's a lovely metaphor for mental health. Yeah? Don't force it. Enjoy the process, take it for what it is, and
just for life, isn't it? It's like life generally. Stop reaching too far. Like try at things, put effort in. You know, nothing happens if you're not in the game. But you know, like enjoy things for what they are, rather than constantly be thinking, "Oh, what could be?" You know, yeah, you have to give things a go, but it's not actually about that. The journey is the important bit.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, man. Yeah. Oh, Nick, thank you so much for your time today, mate. I absolutely loved that. Yeah, that hour just absolutely flew.
Yeah.
Mate, thank you very much.
Let me know when you release it and I'll share it and everything.
Oh, mate, yeah. Yeah, yeah, fantastic. I'm just going to hit that record button now.
Yeah.
Listening from the Proper Mental Podcast. Please like and subscribe.
Plus 5 stars.